This is WFAE's Morning Edition. I'm Lisa Wharf. A frequent obstacle to developing affordable housing is NIMBY, for not in my backyard. Neighbors bombard elected officials with concerns about traffic, crime, and demand on city services as they try to halt new developments. Often they succeed in blocking developments, but in some cities, there's now a growing pro-development movement called YIMBY, for Yes in My Backyard. As part of WFAE's weekly Finding Home series, reporter David Borax joins me now to talk about it. Good morning, David.
Good morning, Lisa.
So what is YIMBY?
The YIMBY movement really got rolling over the past decade in places where housing costs have skyrocketed because of population growth, lack of available land, and the boom in luxury apartments. YIMBY groups support denser development with more housing, especially affordable housing. And the idea is that if you build more, the growing supply will keep down the cost of renting or buying. I talked with Jesse Kanson-Beninov, who helped to form a YIMBY group called A Better Cambridge near Boston in 2012. And that was when NIMBY forces wanted to restrict residential development in a neighborhood called Central Square.
I believe strongly that we need to create higher density communities near existing infrastructure, near jobs and near services. And Central Square, frankly, is a place where we should be building more housing and not less.
And some YIMBY groups also come at it from an environmental perspective. They argue that denser, walkable development will make it easier for people to ditch their cars and fight climate change.
Is there a social justice angle to this activism?
Definitely. These groups also typically oppose the exclusionary nature of NIMBY campaigns that can lock out people of color and low income from certain neighborhoods. Several people I talked to got tuned into YIMBYism after reading The Color of Law by Richard Rothstein. That book lays out how segregation in America was enforced through local zoning and federal policies in the early and mid-20th century. The book inspired the formation of a group here in Charlotte earlier this year called Equitable Communities, CLT. Here's organizer Peter Kelly.
So our goal is to help inform the community about issues in near term related to affordable housing and to help hold the city and county elected officials accountable for making progress on an acknowledged crisis situation.
Kelly founded the group along with his wife, Mary Kelly, and Ricky Woods, the senior minister at Charlotte's First Baptist Church West, who served on the city's Leading on Opportunity task force.
So where are YIMBY movements happening?
Places like San Francisco, Seattle, and Boulder, Colorado, where the first YIMBY conference was held a few years ago. An online directory I found of U.S. YIMBY groups now lists more than 100 organizations, and there are more around the world, from the U.K. and Canada to Amsterdam and Reykjavik. I've talked to people in Boston and Washington, D.C. and Atlanta who are taking a pro-development YIMBY approach.
How are these YIMBY groups trying to change the situation?
Lots of ways. They're speaking up at zoning and city council meetings in favor of specific projects that also may be the focus of NIMBY groups. They're gathering and analyzing data and presenting their findings to their communities and to leaders as they argue for more housing. And they're lobbying for changes in city ordinances and policies to break down barriers to affordable housing development. And 2 weeks ago, Lisa, I went to Atlanta, where one YIMBY group around a big vacant freight rail yard went so far as to draw up its own plans for what the site might look like.
Right now, we're looking at a vast expanse of just asphalt. Previously, up until a couple months ago, for decades, there used to be stacks and stacks of colorful shipping containers, and it'd be a very active site. You'd hear the trucks all with their backup horns because they would be loading and unloading cars from the railroad tracks that are there.
Neighborhood leader Nicole Seekley describes the scene outside a chain-link fence on the south side of what's called Hulsey Yard. It's a 70-acre site where railroad company CSX used to transfer freight between trucks and trains. It's near two MARTA transit stations and the Atlanta Beltline, a former rail line that's been turned into a pedestrian and bicycle trail. Seekley and others in four surrounding neighborhoods hope CSX decides to sell, and they wanted to have a say. So they raised $40,000 and hired their own planning firm. After neighborhood meetings and workshops this spring and summer, the planners came up with three broad concepts. All three call for open space, new street connections between neighborhoods, and more density.
Because it's so close to the Beltline, and because we're pretty close to the MARTA station where we're standing, I think it would make sense to have more density at this location. And with density comes affordable housing. So I think that's going to be a really great component of the site here.
City zoning rules require a minimum of 10 to 15% of new housing units near the Beltline to be affordable for people who make 60 to 80% of the area median income. Seekley chairs the Hulsey Yard Study Committee, which includes representatives from the four neighborhoods. For now, the plan is just a series of ideas for discussion, though Seekley hopes the city council might adopt it.
Should CSX actually put the property up for sale and somebody buy it, this would be something that they can't just throw away and ignore. Not necessarily that they have to follow all of it, but there's a starting point there.
Seekley says the neighbors' unsolicited plans also could help CSX and potential developers gauge the property's value and understand both what's technically possible and what neighbors want. The Hulsey Yard Study Committee didn't happen by accident. It's part of a tradition of neighborhood involvement in Atlanta, says consultant Ryan Gravel. He's known for promoting the idea of developing the Beltline in his master's thesis. As the Beltline took shape, the city and developers worked with neighborhoods that already were organized under Atlanta's Neighborhood Planning Unit system. That was created in 1974 by the city's first African-American mayor, Maynard Jackson, to give neighborhoods a bigger say in planning and zoning. Gravel calls the Hulsey Yard Study Committee a natural next step.
It's a big undertaking. It's multiple neighborhoods. It's a significant site, and everybody knows it. And everybody, a lot of people said it will never happen, but now, of course, here it is happening. And it's smart of them to have been prepared.
The idea of more density on sites like Hulsey Yard is part of a project Gravel worked on with city officials called the Atlanta City Design, completed in 2017. That's the city's vision for how it will grow.
And part of that was, you know, how do you protect people and places that have value in the face of economic forces that otherwise will overrun them?
In other words, how can Atlanta make sure that growth and development don't displace longtime residents, especially those with lower incomes? Atlanta Planning Chief Tim Keene also worked on the city design project.
I think the first thing that cities have to do, which they rarely do, is say, how can we specifically design a city that gets better and better with more people?
Atlanta's population is growing rapidly, reversing a decline that saw it shrink to fewer than 400,000 in 1990. It's now around 500,000, and Keene says the Atlanta City Design plans for a city of 1.2 million people. The trick, says Keene, is getting residents to embrace change and growth.
Because, as you know, many cities do what they can to thwart growth, and residents can't see a better future with more people. And those places are the most unaffordable in America, and that's what we're trying to avoid.
Atlanta is looking at, and in some cases implementing, all kinds of changes to grow its housing base. Besides requiring affordable housing in some areas, it adopted zoning changes earlier this year to promote what planners call missing middle housing in former single-family neighborhoods. This might include duplex and quadruplex apartment houses or accessory dwelling units like garage apartments, housing types that were outlawed 30 or 40 years ago. And Atlanta is spending $50 million to build supportive housing to help people out of homelessness. At least some groups are embracing change and trying to get out ahead of it. Nicole Seekley says the Hulsey Yard Study Committee hopes whatever gets built there will benefit the property owners, existing residents, and those who eventually move here.
There are several horrible developments in Atlanta that were made worse through NIMBYism, and I just don't think we need to go about it that way. I think this can be a win-win for everybody.
Seekley says they'll now lobby the city council for support, and they'll wait to see if the property comes on the market. For WFAE News, I'm David Borax in Atlanta.
This piece is produced as part of our series Finding Home, WFAE's weekly look at housing challenges and community changes throughout the Charlotte area. You can go to wfae.org/findinghome to read and listen to all of our stories in the series. Support for Finding Home is provided by Lowe's Home Improvement. This is WFAE's Morning Edition.